Hi, everyone. My name is Brian P. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Brian.
I am really excited to introduce Alonzo tonight. I have the honor and privilege to be able to work with him and take him through the steps. And I hope we met here at this meeting. I don't know what he heard. I think I complained a lot about God that night. So I don't know if that was what it was, but it's been a real pleasure to work with him. So, Alonzo.
Hello, my name is Alonzo. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Alonzo.
Got a little cheat sheet here. And it was Julia Roberts, by the way. That's what caught my eye. Or caught my ear when I heard you speak. So when Amber first asked me to be a speaker, my first initial reaction was, hell no, I did not want to be up here. But in recovery, we kind of learn how to ignore our first initial reaction, because it's usually wrong, and we kind of learn how to process things and make the right decision of what's best for us, kind of being comfortable with being uncomfortable. And anybody that knows me knows that I am a big Captain America fan.
Yeah!
And one of my favorite quotes doesn't really have anything to do with recovery, but it's an inspirational quote, and if you use inspiration for its purpose, it has everything to do with recovery, you know? So, quote, every one of us has been where you are right now. And I think that's a very true statement here in Alcoholics Anonymous. The quote deals with Captain America kind of teaching a younger superhero how to deal with his new superhero life. And it goes on to say, this place, this is where we come when the monsters we face are too powerful or too plentiful. From the moment you stepped in here, you were never alone. And I think that statement holds true for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we all have kind of, and actually throughout my speech here, you might kind of notice that I steal from different places, different songs, different movies, because I don't really feel like I'm a creative person, so I kind of have to pick and choose little things that inspire me from things I hear every day. You know, we all have things that dig at us every day, and we all have a sickness that we kind of deal with, and usually when it creeps up at the worst times, and it ends up kind of turning our ego up and letting us feel like we can handle things on our own. You know, and just to kind of go back a little bit to my issues with substance abuse started with opiates in the beginning. It kind of fed into alcohol. I started off getting, I'd say like when I was around 18 or 19, I was really interested in becoming a mixed martial artist, fighting in the UFC, to be honest. That was my dream. And I ended up getting injured, and I kind of got hooked on pain meds. And that kind of spiraled out of control for a long time. And, you know, countless years of me just kind of being stuck in that perpetual cycle, you know, one pill turned into two turned into 30, 30 turned into 90 kind of thing. I was starting to kind of lose grasp of myself. And I, you know, ended up being in countless overdoses, jobs, cars, being admitted to the hospital. I just was kind of lost. You know, I ran everything into the ground as far as my family, my health, my, I guess, just life in general. And I couldn't really, I guess, I didn't have anything to cope with. I ran out of money, so I got pretty much the bright idea. I was like, I don't have any money left over, so I would just turned to the cheapest thing, which was alcohol. You know, and I did that for a lot of years. And one thing, talking about my journey started giving up on one of my dreams, and I didn't really have a lot of not counseling, but I never talked about that period in my life when my life started just spiraling out of control into drugs. Is that I had a I had a dream that I didn't accomplish, and it's something I don't really talk about too often as far as my journey into mixed martial arts or anything, but I had a lot of regrets and a lot of shame at the fact that I didn't accomplish one of my dreams, or pretty much the only dream I had at the time, and I didn't realize how much it fed into my addiction and alcohol, because I had, I've never been the strongest, never been the fastest, or the most talented at anything, but there was something about putting together that sport in my head that I knew I was really good. And I knew if I would have kept going, I could have accomplished something. But I gave up. And in turn, it kind of just spiraled into, like, everything in my life was affected. My confidence, my insecurities, my shame, my upbringing, you know, things that we all kind of deal with, everything that kind of adds up into and feeds into our substance abuse, our alcoholism. And it really led to a lot of, I guess, places that we all kind of go as far as feeling hopeless and just trying to fill this empty void with a bottle. And I did that for a number of years, like years where I couldn't even remember, you know, what I was doing in life besides just, you know, drinking daily, waking up at 6 a.m., waking up at 3, 4, 5, 5:30, just waiting for the liquor store to open so I could be right out in front, you know, waiting to get the shakes, you know, from pretty much taking over. And I remember one day, it was a Saturday, I was taking a ride. I live right next to an overpass bridge, a pedestrian bridge. I remember riding a bike down the down the other side, and I didn't have any brakes, and I ended up crashing in front of somebody's yard. So I was on my way to the liquor store, just walking my bike, and on the way back, I saw this place, like a gated facility, and I saw a bunch of guys in the back working out, hitting a punching bag, and, you know, if I was riding my bike, I probably would have just rode by past it, not even noticed what it was, but me walking there from the liquor store, I got curious, so I walked up to the gate, talked to one of the guys, and they let me know it was a rehab facility, a treatment center for drugs and alcohol. And I was kind of like, well, there's something that was pushing me, you know, to go there. And I didn't, I knocked on the front door, and some tall guy with glasses on, very rude guy, you know. He looked at me. He's like, what do you want? I was like, oh, I'm just kind of wondering, what is this place? How can I come in? And he just like gave me this, you know, this look. I like, a few of you guys probably know who that is, but he gave me this look, and he's like, are you drunk right now? You know? And I was just like, no. He's like, dude, I could smell it on you. You need to get out of here. You know, come back and talk to Jeff on Monday. And so I kept calling. I didn't come in, but I kept calling and calling. And by that next Thursday, I was in Robertson's recovery. And that guy obviously was Richard, you know, for those of you who know him. But so that was kind of like, I wasn't ready to be there, but I was there. And I made the best of it. I ran a pretty good program. By the next Wednesday, I had jury duty, and you know they'll take you to your appointments and all that stuff. So, I was 6 days in. I had a lot of tools I built up in 6 days, right? So, so I went to jury duty, already knowing I was excused the night before, and I just waited for the person to drop me off, waited for them to leave, and you know what did I do? I went to the liquor store, and I waited a few hours, and before I said, "Oh, well, some of you guys might not even know this," but so I waited.
Juicy.
Yeah. But I waited a few hours to sober up a little bit and made up my mind I was leaving the next day. Made up some excuse, you know, I got a job or something. Right, 'cause a job will keep you sober. So I was packing up my stuff, ready to go home. I live right down the street, so I ended up walking home with all my luggage. Didn't tell anybody I was going home and put all my stuff on the side of the house. Had a big garbage bag full of cans. Grabbed the cans and went to R&N Market, cashed them in. And this is all stuff I planned the night before. I was just waiting for it, you know. So I got drunk, went back home, and this is me from rehab. Right? Drunk. Completely drunk. Wife didn't even expect me being there. So, a couple more months passed by of the same kind of cycle of drinking every day. Something happened. Somehow the cops came to our house, saw that I was intoxicated, and... you know, we got CPS called on us, and luckily, you know, wife takes care of business, made sure that the kids already had lunches. There was the food was full of the fridge was full of food, the social worker that was called decided that they can go to my parents' house for the night, and we were going to have a mediation the very next day. And to kind of decide the future of what's going to happen with the kids. After that, we woke up the next morning, we cleaned house of all the stuff that I had, that we had, like all the bottles, you know, all that my past history of different substances, like foil from fentanyl, all that kind of stuff. And I... did the same thing. I got a bag full of cans and I cashed them in the hours before our mediation, right? So when we were talking to social worker and kids and grandparents were all in the same room, I was still drunk, you know? Luckily, you know, they decided just, you know, get your guys some help. See what you guys can do on your own. We already had a plan for me to go into treatment back at Robertson's. Luckily, I got in within a couple of weeks. And this time was completely different, right? I was ready. I did 30 days. You know, I did every single thing I was supposed to do there. Never got in trouble. Did all the work my counselor asked of me. And 30 days were up, and I didn't feel any better. I knew leaving that place, it was a matter of time before I started drinking again. I was the only smart thing I did was actually stay connected long enough for me to figure something out for myself. Let me check the time. Okay. So... that was the only thing I did. I was out of there Sunday, Monday morning, I walked my son to school and I showed up at Robertson's and kept going to class, just like I was still there. It really didn't feel like being there, but I knew if I just stuck around long enough, I would, hopefully something would stick, right? So, you know, being aware of knowing that I don't have anything to offer anybody and knowing if I stick around long enough was probably the thing that saved me in the beginning. But I got into like a seeking mode, just constantly searching for something. It was the very, knowing in the back of my head, knowing the last thing I was going to try was probably going to be the thing that saved me, in some way. And I remember the exact, I guess not the date, but the occurrence of how I got into recovery. Because by this point, I was still not in recovery. Went through treatment a couple times, but I wasn't in recovery yet. The exact time I remember, I was taking my wife to the doctor. She had an appointment in Farmersville, and I knew that there was a liquor store right across the street. You know, this was like about a month after being out of Robertson's. So what I planned on doing was waiting for her to be called into the back room, and I was going to run across the street and buy a bottle. But before I left, I remember there was something telling me, like, maybe take your AA book, you know. I didn't know what that feeling was or what was telling me. I know now it was God. But at the time, I didn't, like, well, why? Like, I was conflicted. I didn't know what to do. So, just by chance, I decided, oh, I'll just take the book. Instead of being on my phone, I will at least pretend like I'm reading the book. You know, just trying to cover my bases, you know. Like, I'm going to run to the liquor store, but I'll pretend like I'm reading my book. But waiting for her to be called in, I actually started reading it. She got called in. I stood there. I was reading out loud. I remember something from treatment. They say, if you're reading something and you want to feel inspired, read it out loud, at least so that your inner self can hear a voice speaking. So I did. And I might have kind of looked like a weirdo in the waiting room of a doctor's office reading an AA book, but I did. And I ended up reading about 40 pages. And she came out, we went home, and I kept reading. And I remember the exact, like, moment where my recovery started. It was that day. I was reading a chapter, a page out of the We Agnostics. It was page 50, talking about people that are cynical towards spiritual beliefs. And I came up, or I read this one. And this, reading this for the first time, was when my recovery started. The passage goes, instead, we looked at human defects of these people, and sometimes their shortcomings, as a basis of wholesale condemnation. We talked of intolerance, while we were intolerant ourselves. We missed the reality and the beauty of the forest, because we were diverted by the ugliness of some of its trees. We never gave the spiritual side of life a fair hearing. And maybe kind of to some, or to, you know, anybody just reading it, it's just a phrase or a piece of the book. But for me, when I was seeking, I was just looking for something just to grab me, you know. And reading about the beauty of the forest, it got me. That's the moment everything changed. That's what led me to pay attention in the meetings. That's what led me to, you know, come here. And I was just, from that moment on, I was just searching for inspiration, a sign, guidance, you know, clouds to open up, light to shine on me. And I was listening. And that's when I met Brian at this meeting. And, you know, just talking about listening, like really listening. And he started talking about Julia Roberts. And growing up, I kind of had a thing for Julia Roberts, you know. So I was like, that was it. I was like, okay, I got to talk to that man right there. And that's, obviously, it was a lot of other stuff, struggling with spirituality and your relationship with God. That really, you know, that opened my eyes. But, you know, Julia Roberts, you know, that got it. And from then on, just kind of being, really trying to put forth the effort of being honest about myself, about my problems, my history, starting step work. And I wrote a lot of stuff about step work, but it's just like drawing a blank right now. But really starting the step work and how, like, the process of doing the steps and taking your time, doing it right. And I think we spent a couple months on step one, just really trying to understand it, really admitting to myself that I am a real alcoholic, that I am powerless over something, and I don't have control. By that point, I was really ready to accept help, to accept myself, to accept God, number one, because it's something I ran away from my entire life. Never thought I needed God, never cared for spirituality. I'd say more religion, you know. And that's where the beauty of the forest and being diverted by the ugliness of some of its trees, that's where that really made sense. Because I was always looking at every individual person that was in, that was religious or into God, and that was all my judgments were based off of. People, you know, being intolerant of people, which is, you know, that's what I kind of related religion to, just being intolerant. And just, you know, going over that, like, as far as step work, that the things that really helped me was, in the simplest terms that step work is that I can put into terms is, I know the answers are coming. The more I work on my steps and myself, the answers why I feel the way I do, I know they're coming. You just have to be patient and do the work. Like, faith without works is dead. I already had a beautiful gift of sobriety at the time. I had no idea why I was sober. Come to find out, it was a gift from God. And now that's when the work comes in. This is the feeling I need to get, or need to keep going for. And I remember recovery started when I read this quote. When I finally felt safe, it was the day after Thanksgiving. I remember this because the Thanksgiving before, I burnt the turkey because I was drunk. yeah. And I'm talking about, like, burned it. Like, I left it in there for, like, an extra 4 hours. it was black, like, black, black. But very crispy. But I remember talking about ingredients. You know, like, when I first started learning how to cook, I would throw in all these different ingredients into everything, thinking that's how you make something taste good. You know, just keep adding flavor. And so this Thanksgiving, instead of adding all this stuff, you know, I decided there's one ingredient that I didn't have, which was alcohol. And you know, it was the first time I felt great as a family, my parents, my children. I led prayer for the very first time in my house. And everything, like, nothing fancy, just a normal Thanksgiving, right? The night ended. The very next morning, I remember taking my mom to work. Me and my wife took her to work. And I was driving off getting onto the 198 right next to off of Demery by Burger King. I remember just like looking up in the, at the sky and thinking to myself, my wife in the car, like wow, like we're doing it, like we're sober, we had a good night. And I remember this just feeling like this like chills, a warmth that it was overwhelming. I don't remember if I told my wife at the time, but I know I mentioned it a lot now, but I just, this very warm feeling that I'll never forget. And I knew my mission in life was to keep that feeling, to look for that feeling in any way I can in the future. And the only thing that makes sense to me what that feeling was feeling the Holy Spirit. And now it's, I can understand what that means because I felt it before, and now it's like I can actually get it doing dishes, being so happy doing dishes or cutting the yard or being in the back working out with my sons or just simple life things, things that I thought were mediocre in the past, you know, always wanting something more in life. Never really appreciating what I had. And one thing I remember I would say when I was in treatment is, I don't want to be looking, I don't want to live life lacking, or living it in what lacks in the world. I want to see the beautiful, the plentiful in all things. And that's the number one thing that recovery has given me. It's a brand new perspective on things, being able to realize how much I do have instead of focusing on what I don't. And then, I'd say a few months after that, it was my son's first, or our first big celebration, my son's 15th birthday. Jack, yeah. His 15th birthday. I'm terrible with numbers, but. And I remember leading up to that time, I was praying for patience, a lot. Patience, right? Patience. Like, I need to be patient. Things will come. And I got it. This strong young man right here, Noah, my oldest, we were wrestling, and he broke my leg. So, I've never broken a bone before, never had any serious injuries or anything, but when it happened, I knew I got what I prayed for. I knew for sure. Okay, so my answers were prayer, or were my prayers, you know what I mean, my prayers were answered. To be able to know that, to know that you got what you asked for, even though it's not in the form that you asked, but knowing that, okay, this is God talking to you right now, right? And obviously I have a past with opiates, right? So I knew I was going to get pain medication for this break. I was clinging to recovery, going to Robertson's every day. That was taken away. So I understood the challenge here. I knew this was a test. And I knew I had two ways I can go. But the thing is, actually being aware and knowing is half the battle. You know, knowing where what kind of lies in front of you, and that knowing that this is a challenge. It kept me away from a lot of people that I depended on. One of the biggest, besides Robertson, was the aftercare program. When I first got to aftercare after treatment at Robertson's, it was at Pine. And I didn't know anybody there. You know, I'm a Robertson's guy. But I was very, very determined, not at the time, not to stay sober, but to make it seem like I was going to stay sober, you know? But still, I was sticking around. And I went to Pine every Sunday, not really knowing anybody, not feeling accepted, but not feeling turned away. You know, I just didn't know. And I'm a pretty quiet guy by nature. And I met and was introduced to a lot of good guys, a lot of guys I see right now. And I remember feeling inspired by the openness. I know there's like a little rivalry between Robertsons and Pines, but we're all brothers, you know. I remember that was one of the only things, because I couldn't go to Robertsons lockdown, or you know, sometimes COVID lockdowns or whatever. But I was in the group chat at Pine, at Pine Aftercare, and I remember, you know, being close to one guy, and just, I knew that he was always there for me. Even if I was just saying hey, or he would call me just to check up on me. And that meant everything to me. And it, you know, it inspired me to keep aftercare going, or to start aftercare at Robertson's when the option became available. Very number one inspiration for me to take that job. And you know, that group that we have right now in aftercare, we got something real special at Robertson's, and to me it's all thanks to Storm. You know, I learned a lot from him, how to carry myself, how to be confident in front of people. I'm not showing that right now. I'm a little nervous, but I'm here. I wouldn't be up here without all of that. Some of the things that I've learned in recovery, through volunteering, through being a dad, a husband, a son, is to really slow down, take your time, do things slow, honestly. Enjoy it. Even the things you don't want to do, take your time, soak it all in, because you really don't know what can happen. Recovery, or you know, addiction, alcoholism, just life in general, you never know how much time, you know, we have with each other. And that's the one thing I learned how to do, slow down, enjoy the process, trust the process, because that kind of leads into how I view the world, you know, perspective. I've never, ever have made so many friends in a short amount of time, and I've never lost so many friends in a short amount of time ever too. And I think that's very, very important to think about. You know, look to each other to inspire, to get inspiration from. Like I mentioned at the beginning, I steal inspiration from everywhere. From movies, from books, from people that don't feel like they're inspiring anybody. The people that walk through the door at Robertson's every day inspire me to be better. The people that message me daily inspire me to be better. All this time, you know, being a volunteer at Robertson's and taking over the aftercare program actually led me to be employed by Robertson's. So now I'm actually a substance abuse counselor. And my... My mission every single day is to make somebody's life better, help make somebody's life better, make their situation better, make my coworker's situation better. Just me being in their presence, if that can improve just one moment of their day, that's my mission in life. And that goes, my family, you know, doesn't get that luxury all the time. I'm kind of a jerk, you know, at home, but you know, that's kind of like the family usually gets the worst of it. The hardest ones to help are the ones closest to you. Yeah, that's...
When do I... Is that about 5 minutes?
Five minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. So, as far as that...
You can always go to questions whenever.
I skipped over some stuff. I'm going to get in trouble for this. Big time.
Uh-oh.
So, I just passed 18 months of sobriety.
Woo!
And my wife has 18 months as well. We're a day apart. Don't pressure her to speak or anything, but I just...
All right!
That's nothing for you!
I've been holding this in my pocket for about 2 weeks because I didn't want her to see it.
Right.
Aww.
But,
come get your chair!
Hi, I'm Zenaida. I'm not an alcoholic, and I have a year and a half.
And one thing, if anybody here has a significant other, partner that is going through the same thing that you know we are all going through, have been through. Support each other. Try not to interfere with how their recovery works, because we all have to run our own program, and we all have to find what works for us. But be there to support each other, you know, always. And if anyone has questions, I'll ask your questions. I guess that's all time.
Oh yeah. I've got my classic question. What do you do for your sobriety every day? Do you, in the morning, do you have a routine that you do?
The thing that's most enjoyable is I bug the crap out of my family, especially in the mornings. I wake up usually ready to go, ready to get my day started, ready to get to work. I love going to work every day. I love it. But the one thing I love more is playing the music really loud in the morning and singing and waking everybody up.
Yeah.
Like what? That makes me happy. That's fun for me. I exercise, you know, I think a strong body, you know, strong mind, you know, we're working the body heals the mind kind of thing. Yes. Rob?
I just wanted to say I'm glad that the 7 days rolled into more, and I'm glad that I got to meet you. And then I was in the program with you, and you're a very special person. Thanks for being in our lives, man.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. My privilege. My privilege. My privilege. And that.
I just want to say thank you for making such an impact on all of our lives. And for anybody, if you guys ever need anybody to talk to, this guy is the most, you know, the best person that I've ever talked to. Like, I'm a crybaby, you know. I'm crying right now because of his speech, you know. I didn't know how deep his addiction was, you know. My addiction doesn't nearly go as bad as yours was, but...
You inspire me as well, buddy. Okay, cool.
All right.
Wrap it up.
Yeah, oh, one more question. Last question.
What's up, buddy?
What's your most important tool that you use to help yourself?
Yeah. The most important tool is knowing that I don't have any control whatsoever, and I always have somebody, or I always have God right behind me. Honestly, it sometimes it feels effortless. It feels like I'm being just pushed. Like whatever I do in my life, whatever is in front of me, I feel like there's just constant push right behind me, supporting me. Like none of it comes from me. I don't know where it comes from. Oh, I do. It comes from God. Number one.
All right. All right. Woo!
All right, you guys, let's give it up for London one more time.